to convene the House Subcommittee on Workforce Development, February 18th, 2010.
And the House Committee on Sustainability and Economic Development will come to order as well. We are convened together today to begin an informational meeting on the Green Jobs Council. It's a result of the passage of House Bill 3100 in the last session. We have a great panel set, so let's invite Representative Edwards, Laurie Luchak, Barbara Byrd, Greg White, and we already see Sylvia Hayes by video, who's with us.
And just as a formality, I will tap in the informational meeting as well.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Chair Reed, Chair Witt, committee members. I thank you for this opportunity to present an initial draft of the Oregon Green Jobs Growth Plan. For the record, I am David Edwards, State Representative from House District 30, which encompasses Greater Hillsborough, North Plains, and other areas within Washington County. To develop this plan, the governor convened the Oregon Green Jobs Council, which consists of representatives from state government, business and labor, some of whom are to my left and right, as well as Representative Huffman, who is part of that council. In addition, the Oregon Community College and Workforce Development Department hired a consulting firm, 3E Strategies, to work closely with the Oregon Workforce Investment Board and Business Oregon to staff the Green Jobs Council to conduct research and write the plan. And you'll hear shortly from Sylvia Hayes representing that firm. As you know, Oregon is a leader in sustainable development and clean technology. We have the country's highest per capita employment in green jobs, and the pace of green jobs growth is more than three times that of job growth generally. The Green Jobs Growth Plan is designed to capitalize on these trends. In these uncertain economic times, training today's workforce requires innovative ideas and bold initiatives. A coordinated and well-planned clean tech workforce policy approach will help ensure job growth in today's most promising sectors and give Oregon a competitive edge in the global economy. The plan, as you know, has its origins in House Bill 3300, which passed during the last regular session. The bill specified a number of tasks, notably developing a plan that leverages and aligns existing public programs to train and support green-collar workers, formulating and recommending new or expanded financial incentives and other strategies designed to recruit, retain, or expand green economy businesses, and lastly, identifying emerging technologies and innovations that are likely to contribute to advancements in the green economy. So as you can see from the scope and length of the draft plan before you, achieving these goals entails considerable research and many stakeholder conversations. Accordingly, to develop the most robust plan, that is a plan that is thoughtful, comprehensive, and practical, we summarily decided to present the plan in two distinct parts. So the draft before you represents the foundational data and sector analysis necessary to craft the detailed policy and program recommendations we anticipate in the second part. As I mentioned, Sylvia Hayes of E3 Strategies will walk you through the draft plan shortly. This plan leverages in part the Oregon Employment Department's recent survey of the state's green economy. We're only the second state in the country after Washington State to conduct such a survey, and given a recently awarded federal grant, we have a unique opportunity to further our understanding of the employment prospects in this promising area. We have established a timeline for developing the final work product with a September deadline designed to ensure that our recommendations and associated policy options can be considered as part of the governor's 2011-13 budget and, of course, the next legislative assembly. In summary, this effort is aimed squarely at growing Oregon businesses and improving the lives of many low and middle income workers who are suffering the worst consequences of the current economic climate. We are working with all due speed in a collaborative fashion to ensure our recommendations represent the best possible thinking on how to secure the future for the people of this state. That said, with the chair's permission, I will turn the dais over to Laurie Luchak, president of Miles Fiberglass and Composites, and co-chair of the Oregon Green Jobs Council.
Thank you, Representative Edwards.
Thank you. Chair Swit, Chair Reed, and members of the committee, thank you for having me this morning. I'm Laurie Luchak, president of Miles Fiberglass and Composites, co-chair of Oregon Green Jobs Council, and newly appointed member of Oregon Workforce Investment Board. As you know, the current economy has taken a toll on many companies such as ours. We have suffered many setbacks in this economy. Much of these setbacks have been for many of our customers going out of business. Every time a company goes out of business, 5 more follow that service that business. To give you an idea, our main customers were RV manufacturers, mostly in Oregon. 8 of those companies went out of business, representing 65% of our business. We went from 90 employees to 32. Lucky for us, wind turbines are made out of composites. We quickly changed gears and opened up Miles Wind Services. We ended up servicing wind turbines around the country, representing 50% of our business that first year. Without this business, we would not be here today. The skills needed to repair composite turbine blades are similar but slightly different. We quickly set up training to convert the skills we had into skills needed to repair blades. Since then, we have diversified into many more green products, such as electric car bodies, ice energy tanks, solar dome energy shelters, and streetcars. We now have rehired 35 of the 50 back, and will be rehiring 10 more this month. This shows the importance of green jobs to companies like ours and others. Green products are keeping us in business and will help create jobs in Oregon. In some cases, businesses can use similar skill sets, but some training is needed. In other cases, it's the same skill sets that are making green products. I have met gearbox companies that are now retooling to service and sell gearboxes to wind turbine companies, and roofers who now install solar panels. Helping companies such as these will bring business diversify to service or produce green products, and in turn bring business to Oregon and green jobs. This is the reason we have brought together many industries and academic leaders, as well as government agencies, to have valuable input into this process. The Green Jobs Council is determined to help identify, promote, flourish green jobs here in Oregon. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Ms. Bird?
Thank you, Chair Smith and Reed and members of the committee. My name is Barbara Bird, and I'm the Secretary-Treasurer of the Oregon AFL-CIO. I'm not going to read my entire testimony. You have it there. But I want to say a couple things about how we're doing our work and why it's important. Organized labor supported the passage of HB 3300 because we saw it as a way to do two things, to create a new green economy in Oregon and to do it in a way that helps rebuild our middle class in this state. We don't think that green jobs are the answer to the economic crisis that we're in right now, but they certainly can be part of the answer if we do this the right way. I want to say before I go on, this is a great council. There are some very competent and excellent staff that are working with us. The folks from the private sector that are on this council have a level of expertise that is very impressive, and it's really great to work with them. And I think we see that in our meetings, that they bring a lot of good information to the job. So. Just want to get that out there. About doing this work the right way, first of all, we are very cognizant on the council of the current economic situation and the limits that imposes on the state's budget and on local budgets as well. And we want to do this the right way by prioritizing the work, by really being really strategic and careful about where we recommend that state resources be put. We also want to do it in a way that helps not just state businesses, but also the state's workers, that builds on Oregon's strengths, that helps out the economy in the short run, but that also anticipates what the needs are going to be in the longer run. We have a lot of opportunities here, and there's a danger sometimes to jump on the opportunity bandwagon without thinking through what's really going to grow our economy and jobs in the state. We do have, and I think we can do both. We have some great opportunities, and just a couple of examples: the Portland Clean Energy Works program, the East bill that Rep. Bailey helped get passed or spearheaded. Really, there are other kinds of home weatherization opportunities. There's a lot of really good work being done in this energy efficiency area. provided that we can figure out how to move people from entry-level jobs into career jobs in construction, because that's part of the challenge there. I want to emphasize also that we have opportunities in manufacturing, from the spectacular success story of Oregon Iron Works to Miles Fiberglass, which I think is a lead company in figuring out how can we build not basic manufacturing necessarily, but manufacturing that will supply equipment and other pieces of the puzzle to larger renewable energy economies. And we don't have to reinvent the wheel to do this work either. We have a lot of good educational institutions. We have a very strong apprenticeship system in this state that I know that you've thought about and heard a lot about. Just another example, it isn't just electrical and plumbing apprenticeship programs, which are great and do a lot of really good work in solar and wind energy and geothermal, but we also, the laborers union here in the state has recently introduced a path-breaking, I think, weatherization training program for workers. It's a 6-week program. They're partnering with advocates from the low-income community and communities of color to make sure that we bring people out of desperate situations into entry-level jobs, and they'll then build these pathways into careers in construction that this ought to be all about. A couple of other thoughts on how to do this the right way. I think that we need, when we make these investments, and we'll be talking about this in the council, we need to make sure that there are standards for jobs and also ways to hold accountable the people who receive the funds to do this work, accountable both for jobs and also for the environmental benefits they're promising. The standards that we set, I think, need to be standards for both the jobs and the training. We need to make sure that we're not just setting up training programs for their own sake, that there really are jobs for people to go into, and those jobs have some sort of future. And as well, I think that the training that's provided gives assistance not just to companies that need workers, but also that provides some sort of credential, preferably a portable credential, for the workers themselves who go through the training, so that they can move if they need to and carry their skills with them. One other thought I had as I was thinking about this testimony is that we think about construction workers, manufacturing a lot when we talk about green jobs. There are a lot of public sector workers who do green jobs. My union, the teachers union, there are a lot of people in community colleges who are teaching K-12 who are doing green jobs. They're teaching kids about the environment. They're helping dislocated workers retrain for green jobs. Those folks need to be supported and invested in. And we have members in other of our unions who do work in the Department of Environmental Quality and in city and county sustainability offices. All of them have experienced increases in their workload because of the good environmental bills that this legislature has passed. They need support. They need help. We need to make sure that those jobs are maintained as we do this work. And in conclusion, I just want to say one final thing. I have been and am a very strong supporter of green jobs, of climate policy, and doing this work the right way for our state. But I don't think that this is the answer to the economic crisis. I think it's part of the answer, but it's not the answer. Our state needs good jobs, period, and we need them soon. And so I want to thank you for the work you did to pass the unemployment extension, and urge you not to let some of the jobs bills that are currently pending die before this session is over. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Burden. I particularly appreciate you highlighting East and Representative Bailey's work for the benefit of all who are here. This committee, the Sustainability and Economic Development Committee, also did a lot of work on that. So thanks to the rest of the committee as well. Mr. White, do you want to go next, or should we hear from Ms. Hayes? Your choice.
I think we ought to hear from Ms. Hayes first.
Okay, great. First time we've done a video conference in this committee, so it's a new experience. We're looking at you, Ms. Hayes. We can. Thank you.
Okay. Terrific. It took a second for the mute to clear. I will give you a quick overview. I believe, Greg, did you hand out the slide, the handouts?
And, of course, we also need you to identify yourself for the record as you start, please.
Yes, thank you. Sylvia Hayes, 3E Strategies, staff to the Green Jobs Council.
Thanks.
Yes, Sylvia, they do have the slides.
I'm just going to move through that, and if whatever additional level of detail and depth you want, just let me know. I'll start there and see how much more information that you guys would like. So on that first page you'll look through, it does give the names of the current Green Jobs Council. I should make one notable change. Colleen Neal with Neighbor Impact is no longer on the council, and the council chairs are looking into making sure that we find someone from housing and the low-income community to fill that position. The council does really comprise, or is comprised of, a good blend, I think, of business people, industry representatives, workforce experts, organized labor, and again, I think it's very important that we keep that direct connection to low income and the affordable housing element. I'm sure you guys are all well versed with this, but we have used the same definition of a green jobs that our own Oregon Employment Department has come up with, and are maintaining consistency throughout. Tied to that, our whole plan also really does build on the Employment Department's approach of this being about greening the entire economy, not just exchanging emphasis on, that have been placed on conventional industries for new emerging green. It is about embedding this within the economy as a whole. The next slide just shows you some of what's actually required in HB 3300, and so obviously are elements of the plan, and that's an identification of high demand green industries. That's much more difficult than it sounds like, and I'll talk a little bit about our horse and cart challenge with labor market information in a minute, but we already are intensely working on that piece with the Employment Department and Business Oregon. Promoting the development of emerging green technologies and innovations, leveraging and aligning existing public workforce development programs. So we're hoping to not, certainly planning not to call for any new agencies or layers, but can we integrate the layers that we already have effectively for these green job producing sectors? Making basic adult education program to the green jobs training programs. A lot of emphasis on what Barbara mentioned, the need to develop career pathways and opportunities for people to get employed quickly, get into a green position quickly, but not stagnate there. And that's just totally, to pun intended, this is sort of cutting a whole new path, because this has not been done anywhere before. Ensuring that support services are integrated into Green Job Training Program. HB 3300 does specifically call out the emphasis on these targeted populations that are listed on your slide, and we're taking those into account as we go forward. I think given the state of Oregon's economy, we could probably almost all fall under that general disadvantaged group listing right now. And then we're also coming up with, and we're well down the path actually, with creating a list of terms and definitions that hopefully will facilitate some better consistency between the terminology in the green jobs, green industries world, and the workforce world. When Representative Edwards introduced the timeline, he mentioned that there had been some changes there, and that really is largely because we do have, as I mentioned, a horse and cart challenge. Probably most of you know that Oregon received a $1.2 million grant, stimulus funds money, to do labor market research into green jobs, and the Employment Department is just embarking on that. And yet, we were charged with HB 3300 to present you with a plan that prioritizes where we think the state should direct its resource and energy related to green jobs. Originally, that was to have been delivered to you last month. So we realized that we were missing an opportunity to really use the work that the Employment Department was going to be doing, and that's when we made some revisions to the timeline. It still is going to be a bit of a challenge, unfortunately, because the Employment Department is anticipating having most of this green labor market research done by May of next year. So there's still, we're shooting for a September finalization of this plan. Our in- intent is to present a plan to you in the end, in September, that has strong flexibility mechanisms worked into it so that we can take advantage of anything that's really significant that comes out of that labor market information research. We have six key objectives to the Green Jobs Plan at this point. They're listed on the next slide. And we're really trying to run this dual path of focusing on what can we do immediately to get people employed immediately, you know, the urgency that Barbara mentioned. But at the same time, using the labor market information, the economic analysis, and kind of hopefully putting a fairly credible crystal ball on what do we simultaneously want to be developing for the next 5-10 years for the next wave of employment. Again, the second bullet, a real emphasis on greening up and skilling up in green ways our existing workforce. We think that this is just a really significant core competency that Oregon can continue to capitalize on. Again, taking measures to assure that these jobs we develop have allow people access to living wages, benefits, you know, that people are actually fairly compensated for doing work in this green economy. And then, obviously, we hope the plan will set the foundation for creating a strong workforce going forward. I'll get to it in a second, but one of the things that I really like about HB 3300 is that it does address both workforce and economic development, and it is our intent to capitalize on that link in the development of the plan itself. And obviously our overarching goal with this plan is that it will be very useful in advancing Oregon's leadership in developing economic activity related to green industries and practices. So this next slide is a very major work in progress. And what the council has done so far is identified 12, we're calling them industry clusters. The last two don't really fit that classification, and I'll get to that in a minute. But we've developed, and this is not just pulled out of the air, this is based on the studies that have been done to date, it's based on a good kind of regional green job study that was done by CTED in Washington. We've identified 10 actual industry clusters listed there: green building and development, environmental technologies and services, energy efficiency, solar energy, wind energy, green manufacturing, bioenergy, sustainable forest, ag, and food, geothermal energy, and transportation services. The last two are a little bit of a different beast, but we wanted to place special emphasis there. One is on, obviously, green job opportunities within existing industries. This is potentially very significant, especially, you know, we had a conversation in the council meeting yesterday. Just the rate of turnover, for instance, that our electric utilities are dealing with right now, real opportunity to kind of see those trends that are happening and provide opportunities to skill up in green ways those current occupations. And then the final one, the emerging industries, these are six areas where we know that Oregon has some strength there, it has some opportunity there, but these industries by themselves are not yet really at the scale of a whole cluster approach, nor do at least several of them really have any idea yet what their workforce needs are going to be. Now these 12 categories are listed in the draft plan that was presented to you. I think it's highly likely that these will be whittled down, merged, shifted by the time you get the final draft, and we're already beginning to do that with, again, with this early labor market information work that the Employment Department is working on with us. In coming up with the preliminary strategies, and we listed 17 of them. Again, they are preliminary. We expect these to change a lot because a lot of the work that the council will be doing between now and September is really drilling down on those and giving you a prioritized list that has more thought behind it than what we were able to present last month. The approach, however, I think is what's important. And as I mentioned earlier, HB 3300 recognizes that in order to grow green jobs, you've really got to grow the companies that produce those jobs. And again, that's not just growing new, solely green companies, but that's, you know, supporting economic and job growth across the board. And then focusing on this specialty, which is the green job component of that. Taking that into account, the council really has emphasized a push-pull approach, and the recommendations that we've put forward, and I'm sure that they will be similar in the final recommendations you get, not only lay out specific workforce-related recommendations like create training programs for this specific industry, but it also will have economic development recommendations that the council believes will be useful to growing the industries that are going to be producing those jobs in the first place. So that's an important component, and quite likely those recommendations will be across many agencies potentially, not just Oregon Business Development Department and the workforce system, but quite likely energy will be involved, potentially land use. We are going that broad and that comprehensive in our approach at this point. There are three specific components to how we are going about coming up with recommendations. One, again, is to really capture opportunities to get people employed as quickly as possible while also looking forward and making sure that we're capturing opportunities to create a workforce that might be in great need in 3-5 years. We're taking steps in these recommendations to meet the workforce needs of those emerging industries I mentioned as much as possible. And then also really looking at, as I mentioned earlier, how do we infuse green knowledge, green skills, green competencies into the existing workforce across all industry sectors. In the draft plan that you received, we do lay out our process for plan completion, and we are just been marching along on that. We have monthly meetings of the entire Green Jobs Council. Those meetings, we have already thought through the whole year's schedule of those meetings and lined up the topics that we need to get handled at each of those meetings to meet our deadline of delivering the plan in an effective manner. And staff makes sure that any of the materials, the research, that the council needs to come to those meetings ready to get the work done and make decisions are provided to them in advance. We're really just now beginning to embark on a broader stakeholder involvement process. The council has clearly agreed and consistently agreed that we think it's very important that we get a broad group of stakeholders to weigh in on this plan and to comment and to help make it better and to criticize it as necessary as we go forward. There's a lot of interest in, obviously, the green jobs field right now, and we really want this plan to, in the end, have very broad ownership by as many of the players as possible in that field. And so it's a tight timeline between now and August, September, but we're going to be focusing very hard. We've already got a list put together of about 40 different stakeholders, again, from union, advocacy groups, industry and trade groups, that we're going to be soliciting input from and incorporating that into the final document. And then obviously this ongoing work with the ever-improving labor market information. And I will stop with my last slide there that I think sums up just exactly where I think we are. We have an enormous economic challenge ahead of us. We're in the midst of it right now, but I do believe that there are opportunities that are present because of that challenge that we might not have had were it not here. And I'm really hoping that our work with the Green Jobs Council can position Oregon to come out of these difficult times having seized those opportunities.
Thank you, Ms. Hesnett. Particularly appreciate the way you ended. That's a good it's a good note to end on. Before we hear from Mr. White, before Beth had to step away for a little bit, she reminded me that she made the full 100-page draft report available to everyone electronically in keeping with the aims of the committee. We didn't print that out for everyone, but it's available for your reading.
On page 67, I'm sure you will.
Yeah, so let us know if you need an additional copy or directions to it. Mr. White.
The Green Jobs Council's major, my name is Greg White. I'm executive staff to the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, for the record. Chairs Reed and Witt, in alphabetical order, and members of the committee. I do appreciate the chance to be here today. When the Green Jobs Council's major work is delivering the Green Jobs Growth Plan that's called for in House Bill 3300. However, I did want to inform this group that as we were forming the Green Jobs Council in response to the bill, even before the session ended last time, we received the opportunity from the U.S. Department of Labor to apply for a state energy sector partnership and training grant. And it calls for something called a state energy sector partnership, which is actually a group that is constituted with particular members in it. So as we formed the Green Jobs Council, we knew the kinds of people that we wanted on the council, but in order to form the actual membership, we complied with the grant requirements of the grant for that group so that the Green Jobs Council could actually have two purposes. And while the HB 3300 plan remains the primary task, this group will, according to the grant requirements, actually be the oversight group for carrying out the grant. And we got it. It's $5.38 million for training of low income or those likely to be unemployed throughout the state. The training is planned and carried out by local implementation teams that are convened by the local workforce investment boards. And those different kinds of trainings vary. Well, this is all American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, so the idea is to get people to work quickly so that we, for example, in region, the metro area, they're going to be recruiting those who have some college credits in order to get them AASs or even bachelor's degrees through OIT in this area. There's a lot of weatherization training. Weatherization is really the low-hanging fruit here because there's a lot of money coming to this state for weatherization of low-income houses, and there aren't enough people to carry it out. For example, in Lane County, they're going to be putting a small cohort through the Lane Community College's Sustainability AAS program. And in Medford, the Medford area, they're going to be training 30 electricians in solar grid installation. So it varies widely across the state. We said that we would train almost 1,200 people, place 800 in green jobs. And this is a big challenge. This is a three-year grant. Those 800 jobs aren't necessarily available right now, so we're betting on the come. Luckily, we're one of 36 states that got this grant. Everybody's in the same boat. But this is a good complement to the work that's going on in the Green Jobs Council, and it actually is some actual training on the ground. One of the things that I would like to mention that's especially interesting that will be good for the entire state as we move forward is that in the large the large rural area, the Oregon Consortium, Oregon Workforce Alliance area, 23 counties in the most rural counties in Oregon. They are convening the, I believe it's 9 community colleges in that area to develop a green technology certificate, and we'll train, we'll put a couple of cohorts through that training by the end of the 3 years. That that was in response to what rural employers really need, mostly very small businesses who don't need experts, they need generalists and in entry-level generalists. So that's the idea behind that certificate. And that will be available sooner or later, we think, statewide for everyone. So that, in all community colleges, so that will be a very good complement to this plan. I'm going to stop there and let the committee ask questions. I wanted to be sure that the full scope of the Green Jobs Council work was in front of you, although I am sure that most of your questions will have to do with the plan itself. And by the way, it is available electronically to you, Representative Reed just said, but it's also on www.worksourceoregon.org, and also the full State Energy Sector Partnership proposal is posted there. Thank you
very much. I debated whether we should try and stop for questions as we went through, but you all did a nice job, and I imagine there's some questions now. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things I'd like to point out is one of the questions that I had asked on the council, and my concern about how much of the $5.38 million was going to be taken off of the top for administration. And I was pleased to hear from Cam Preuss, the commissioner, that their percentage is extremely small, and then as the money goes out to the local workforce investment boards, they take nothing. Is that correct, Greg?
No. Representative Huffman, members of the committee, that's not entirely true. No, in every grant, you have to have some administration, right, or you can't do business. And the way federal rules work, you can't spend money you got for administration from one activity on another activity. It's against the law. The total amount for administration, which is it's almost all fiscal and other kinds of real administration, not having to do with counting or training participants or anything like that, is 10% for the entire grant. The Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development has budgeted 3 of that and is passing 7% down to the local areas for administrative purposes. The grant itself also is a coordinator position at Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. That's not really administration. That's going to be coordinating the contracts, grant activities, counting the outcomes, troubleshooting, making sure we achieve what we said we would to the feds. And that position authority, and by the way, the funds limitation has already been through the Ways and Means process.
Thank you.
Follow-up.
Please.
Which I thought was acceptable. My main concern was that CCWD wasn't taking 15% and then the local board's taking 15%, and we actually only get $2 million to put people to work. I would like to ask Greg if he could elaborate a little bit, maybe give some examples of where we envision this money actually going once it gets out into the field, and how exactly are we going to train and create jobs?
Well, this is a training and placement grant. So the money comes to the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Actually, I think it comes to the governor. And then it goes to the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. That small amount that we talked about sticks at the top, although we don't get the cash all at once, of course. I mean, they don't write us a check for $5 million. The feds don't let us keep cash on hand. It's all kind of reimbursement draw system. But then it goes to the state, to the local workforce investment boards. There are 7 in this state, and it will then be expended on those activities that are in the grant, and then of course in contractual arrangements that are passed down to them. Sometimes the training is, well, actually most often the training is with community colleges. I don't think that's the case exclusively, such as in the case in the Medford area. I don't believe that will be community college, the electricians. But I don't know enough about it to be sure, I can tell you. But it's all for training activities, job placement activities through WorkSource Oregon, through the WorkSource Oregon system, the one-stop delivery mechanism system, and the counting of outcomes through that system as well. I don't know how else to answer. That's where it goes.
But maybe a clarification.
Okay.
Let's say Columbia Gorge Community College. Would they receive money, the college receive money, and then issue scholarships for a training program, or Joe's program gets money for apprentices? And Joe's eyes lit up when I said that.
Representative Huffman, members of the committee, yes, Columbia Gorge does get some funds. They are part of that larger rural area, so they will be part of the development of the Green Tech Certificate. The Green Tech Certificate, by the way, development is being led by Umpqua Community College, but all colleges in that area will have some development money to be able to put together staff and teaching staff and so forth to be able to deliver the certificate, and will help to work on the actual curriculum and work with private industry to know what the curriculum contains. Then, yes, the remainder will be for actually, I guess scholarships is a very good way to put it. As people come through the WorkSource centers in rural Oregon, they will be, if they're interested and they're they assess able, with their assessments show that they're able to do this kind of work, they definitely will be given a scholarship for to receive the certificate.
Are there other questions? We have a few more minutes. Representative Frederick?
Yes, I am particularly interested in how you're communicating the availability of these positions to the community. Where are you placing information? Who is coming into it? How are you tracking what folks are taking advantage of these programs?
Representative Frederick and members of the committee, I assume you mean the grant activities. It's through the local workforce investment boards. So, for example, in the Portland metro area, it's Work Systems Inc. who will be carrying it out, and this will be part of the toolkit that's available as people come through the WorkSource centers. So, of course, right now the WorkSource centers are pretty slammed with unemployed folks, and there are lots of people who can take advantage of this kind of training. Some of that is laid out in the full grant, if you'd like to take a look at that. Also, there's an excerpt of what Region 2, the metro area, will be doing in your packet that you have in front of you today. And it gives you more information about how people will be identified. But as that one's in that particular case, it's people who already have some college credit. They will be hearing about it as they go through the WorkSource centers. Work Systems Inc. is also pretty darn good at communications. So I assume there will be some communication about it, but because they are recruiting specialized kind of folks. I'm not part of that. I mean, that's up to them to do.
Excuse me, Chair.
Follow up?
Yeah, that's fine.
I'm not as concerned about the folks who have college credit. I'm talking about many of the folks who do not.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the young men that I know of in my community who do not have college credit, they barely got high school credit, and might be, in fact, available for some of the weatherization plans, et cetera. How are you reaching those folks? Is that up to Work Systems Inc.
Yes,
as well?
Yes, Representative Frederick, yeah, and members of the committee, yes it is, and that would not be part of this grant, at least in the Portland metro area. Other areas, they are doing weatherization training for all kinds of people. It's for unemployed individuals. So in Clackamas County, in Marion Poke Yamhill, in Lynn Benton Lincoln, all of those, they are doing weatherization training.
One quick follow-up, yes, if you don't mind. So you're saying that they're not doing weatherization training in the Portland area or in Multnomah County?
Representative Frederick, they may be, but not through this grant.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
I have Representative Benz, Witt, and then Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any one of you can answer this, and I believe it goes to Barbara's point about any job, green or otherwise, right now. But I noticed that on page 4 of the slide, the first bullet point is identify high-demand green industries. My fear is that we don't have any or won't have any if the tax credit programs dry up or fuel prices remain low or the RPS becomes filled. So how are you making sure that you're not targeting industries that aren't going to have the jobs for which you're training folks?
Chair, it's Representative Bence. As Sylvia indicated during her presentation, we're working on a collaborative strategy with industry to both identify mechanisms to continue to expand existing businesses and attract new ones at the same time as we're developing training programs to suit those employers. So it's a two-part collaborative strategy to ensure that we're aligning our training opportunities with jobs that will exist.
And follow up. Anticipating that response, have we had the state economist or some other group look at this program and say, yes, in our humble opinion, you have guessed right, and we join you kind of on a peer review basis in sharing the blame if the guess is wrong?
Or the credit if it's right.
If it's okay, Representative Bence, I'd be glad to answer that. Because of legislative duties, Representative Edwards could not be at our meeting yesterday. Either could Representative Huffman. Both are very active members of our council, by the way, and we really appreciate their input. But he missed the major part of the discussion, which went for nearly 2 hours yesterday of our three-hour meeting, which is the Ms. Hayes called the clusters, or we could call them sectors, or in the grant they're called networks of excellence, however you want to characterize those industry groupings. We have the Employment Department economists working with the Oregon Business Development Department economists to actually come up with hard data to help us with our decision making. They presented preliminary findings yesterday, so you could imagine it more or less as those clusters, although they're grouped down one side of the matrix, down the vertical axis, and on the horizontal axis are all the factors that we think are important or that the economists think are important in our prognostications, because as Representative Bence very correctly identifies, these are where jobs are likely to appear. It's a crystal ball. But nevertheless, we plan to base our prioritization on as hard a data as we possibly can. So we're struggling a little with there's one factor that we're really struggling with, and that's economic impact. In other words, what will be the economic impact, say, of wind versus wave, or how many jobs there are likely to be in that, and what kind of wages do they pay? Those kinds of questions that the economists are working on. So yes, even though the work is not yet completed and is probably about, well, I'd say one third done or something, we're definitely planned to be basing on hard economic data.
Thank you, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Chair Reed. Several of you have described building on what may be referred to as more traditional skills for green industries. And I'm wondering if you could give us a better appreciation for what kinds of additional education and training would be involved to acquire those skills. I'm quite certain that it probably matters not when we're moving electrons, whether it be solar-generated energy or coal-generated energy, one green, one very ungreen source, that Mr. Esmond's members are quite qualified to move them regardless. But as Greg pointed out earlier, there may in fact be many instances where some of the apprentices who have not had green skills training specifically may not have acquired the skills to hook up the solar photovoltaic grid that you described earlier. So, and maybe this panel is not equipped because maybe they don't actually do the training themselves. But it would be very interesting to just kind of get a feel for what kind of additional skills and training are necessary here.
Can I just
respond to that? Ms. Hayes, let's we have an answer here, and then we'll come to you if that's okay.
Okay, Representative.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Representative Witt and committee, I can speak to that just from my own viewpoint, just an example. We repair blades, but they're a little bit different than just what we do in the factory. So what we have done is partnered with Clackamas Community College to set up, along with our National Composites Association, a certification program for wind blade technician. It'll be a four-part course. They'll be able to get a certification accreditation of a two-year program. We're moving a blade to the college tomorrow to actually have hands-on training so that our people, as well as other just people off the street or people that are unemployed currently, can go through that program, and then we will have a pipeline to hire and send out around the country, since it's very difficult to find that type of skill right now. It is a new industry, so we're hoping to augment that.
Representative, did you want to follow up, or do you want to hear from Ms. Hayes first?
Yes, please.
Okay. Ms. Hayes.
Thanks, and I apologize. There's a little time delay, so I apologize if I talk over anybody there. I think this is a really good question, and one thing that I would point out, we are in really pretty uncharted territory with this green labor market information. I mean, when Oregon received that $1.2 million labor market grant, we hired the nation's first ever green economist out of Oregon Employment Department. This is all new stuff. When the Employment Department did that Greening of Oregon's Economy study, which was just cutting edge at the time, they took a look not only at which sectors were growing, but what the educational levels were within those sectors. They're now planning, with this labor market information grant, to actually start drilling down into what those green skills are across a bunch of those sectors, which I think is going to be very, very useful. And also, we have identified a preliminary strategy in the draft plan, Green Jobs Growth Plan, that may or may not stick until the end, but we're looking into it, and that is the establishment of skills panels similar to what Washington State has done, the beauty of which really invites and forces industry to be directly involved in coming up with curricula and the framework around these. So that's one way to get to those skills. I think by the end of the year, 18 months down the road, we'll have a really direct answer to that question. But it's just beginning to happen. And the final thing I would mention, I was just in Redmond this morning. There's an initiative called the Sustainable Oregon Schools Initiative that's looking at how to embed green knowledge and sustainability knowledge in the K-12 education system. And one of the things I learned at that is that Starbucks is now saying, if we could have some kind of way to immediately see if a person coming in for a job with us gets sustainability, that would be helpful. They have actually, they say they don't have time to do on-the-job training, but it's critically important to their corporate culture. So they have an employment questionnaire that actually drills down onto whether or not a person understands sustainability and some basic green measures. So a lot going on, but I don't think there is a real answer to that yet.
Thank you very much. We have Representative Bailey and then Representative Greenlee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment, actually, and to follow up on some of the points that Ms. Bird made in her testimony. I appreciate the emphasis on not only creating jobs, but on creating good jobs and moving people up the economic ladder, targeting disadvantaged, dislocated workers, and ensuring that we have jobs that are supporting families as well. We've seen at the federal level, to pull out one sector within the green jobs spectrum, a lot of discussion around quality assurance with regards to energy efficiency. And in that discussion, I think we have seen this play out both federally as well as in other places around the nation and here, that quality component of the jobs and ensuring that we have well-trained workers who can bring that kind of quality to a job actually helps us get lower cost financing, bring more capital investment, and increase the size of the economic pie. And in my view, having those kinds of jobs is one of the ways in which we compete. We will not be able to compete necessarily going forward in manufacturing and other ways on a race to the bottom, but in creating a quality product and in doing a quality job in a way that perhaps foreign competition can't. So I appreciate that. I think it's not only good for families, I think it's good for the overall economy and for the success of this industry cluster.
Thank you very much. Representative Greenlick, and then Representative Dembrough, and then I think we've got to cut it off, although I'd love to spend the whole afternoon talking about this. It's very important. We have another important agenda item as well. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's really a follow-up on what Ms. Byrd said, and I think Representative Wood said as well. I think green jobs are great, and I think everything we do to create green jobs are great, but jobs are great. And I was wondering whether the green jobs activities, which may be may or may not pan out in the way we hope they are, diverting resources that we might use in helping to stimulate other job formation in our state. I mean, diverting. We're talking about equity investments. We're talking about other kinds of industries that could emerge. And is this consistent with, or is it detracting from activities to increase the workforce market here?
Go ahead.
Yeah, Rep. Greenlick and committee members, I didn't mean to set that up as an either-or choice, I don't think. There are, all of the things being equal, we ought to invest in green jobs because we, you know, feed two birds with one hand. I've learned that expression rather than
That's
the alternate
good.
One. But I think that we have to look at, and I think one of the reasons this activity has become such a hot ticket these days, we have to look at where the opportunities are. Right now, a lot of the federal money that's coming down is coming into this green jobs area, and if we can capitalize on what we already are strong in Oregon, which is, you know, an environmental focus and that kind of thing, then we can grab some of that opportunity for ourselves and create jobs. I don't think that detracts from trying to do work in other areas, and certainly my organization works on gray jobs as well as green jobs, as you know. I do think that we are going to need to make strategic choices, though, and it's why I think that we need to look not just at environmental benefits, but also what the jobs pay and whether they provide benefits and so on when we make the decision. So to that extent, I certainly get what you're talking about.
Thank you. Representative Dembrough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate this line of conversation and the importance of building jobs and training to jobs. And it's the latter that I would really, I'd like to stress to you, just based on my own experience, years in the community college system, I've seen the advantage of short-term training programs which really do lead to sustainable jobs, and I mean sustainable in all senses of the word. But I've also seen a lot of discouraged workers who enter programs and then only to become further discouraged because the jobs that they were trained for don't pan out. And that has a horrendous psychological impact on people who are particularly, who are, you know, generationally discouraged. And so in my experience, the most successful training programs are those that really are training to existing jobs, you know, where the, you know, industry is making an investment in, you know, working closely with the colleges to train their workers to jobs that are there waiting for them, and a clearly articulated career pathway, you know, within their company and you know, related companies. And so the more, it seems to me that the more that we could prioritize that kind of program as these funds are being dispersed, I think the better job we'll be doing.
any of you would like to respond, that's fine. Because I don't think you should feel obligated if not.
Representative Dembrough, that's, I think, is a worthwhile caution. As I said, you know, we're betting on the come with this grant in that a lot of the jobs are not currently available. That doesn't mean that we don't think they will be available as the time goes on. It's a very complicated equation because green companies, the ones you think of as really truly green companies, like say a solar company, need traditional occupations. I mean, they need accountants, for example. I mean, and those that are traditional companies need green workers, as in Lori Luchak's business. I mean, so it's a very complicated equation, and the truth is that. And I don't want to overstate this, because I don't want to sound particularly loony. But all jobs are becoming more and more green, and I'm not saying that all jobs are green jobs or all jobs should be green jobs. But this has been likened to the IT revolution. You know, 15, 20 years ago, just a very few people had computers or knew how to use a computer, and it was a very specialized occupation. Now we all do it. And we all have just as much knowledge as those people did back then. And so to me, that's a very good analogy of where we could be going with green jobs.
I think perhaps you're being a little charitable, speaking only for myself, about having as much knowledge as anyone else did on IT. Let me ask just one quick question before we wrap up. It occurs to me that there's been some discussions in this session about how subsequent sessions of the legislature might look, and more emphasis on earlier preparation of legislation, and sort of combine that with the lessons we learned with East and other big pieces of legislation. I'm guessing that the council is going to come up with good things that the legislature ought to be acting on, or at least considering, but that they might also be significant enough that we would benefit from early discussion of those things. So is there any way any of you might want to give us any sort of preview that this committee or these joint committees might want to be considering in our interim meetings and discussions?
Representative Reed, members of the committee, I think that's an excellent suggestion. Obviously, you won't be actually convening again until next January, but we do plan to have this plan complete to the extent it can be complete in September. I mean, it'll always be a work in progress, but that seems to me to be an excellent time. Also, we're talking with the agencies involved as far as actual budget requests, and the process for doing that starts almost immediately. We're not quite ready for that, and I certainly can't give you any preview at this point, but there may be a point even before September that we'll have some kind of an idea of what the asks may be. And as to Ms. Bird's comments earlier in her testimony, we understand the budget constraints that will be. We just heard the revenue forecast that we're not looking. We probably are not going to have the opportunity to do what we would really like to do. However, the earlier we can let you know, it seems like the better that would be.
Indeed. And in fact, in September, there have been talk about some deadlines around pre-session filing and so on. So please consider this an invitation to keep our committee posted as quickly as you have even general
concepts. Thank you very much.
Thank you. With that, I think we'll close the informational meeting on the Green Jobs Council. Appreciate you being here and look forward to hearing updates on your work.
With that, I'm going to adjourn the subcommittee on workforce development and excuse the subcommittee members. I'm sure with Rep. Reed's permission, if any of you are excited about the remainder of the agenda, you would be welcome to stay. But those of you who have other things to accomplish this afternoon, thank you very much.
Indeed. And we'll take about a 30-second recess to let the members of the subcommittee take their leave.